Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
It's the Pancake from Power Slam Show. We are here. We are live and in living color, if you will, a la Dusty Rhodes. We are going to have a great time as we do every week here in the studio, making it happen for Pancakes and Power Slams. I am Chris Featherstone, your host, as always, and I will be tagged along with the esteemed Raw correspondent Derek, who will not only contribute to Raw, but will assist me in the Flavor of the Week topic, which is the top 10 greatest factions. Now, we're including major promotions, so WWE, NWA, World Class, maybe. Could you see an ECW in there? You could, but at the same time, you may not, just to spoil your hopes there. No ECW faction. We had a long list of Derek and I. We put this top 10 together, and we came up with a long list of possibilities, and we just kind of nailed it down to the top 10 best all-time wrestling greatest factions. So that should be very fun. Let us know your thoughts. Of course, the number is 347-884-8452. Again, the number is 347-884-8452. All right, let's go to the first trivia question of the night. The question is, who were the participants of the $25,000 Body Slam Challenge? Who were the participants of the $25,000 Body Slam Challenge? Let's get on to Raw. Start off with a John Cena in-ring promo. You know, we probably get a John Cena in-ring promo a insanely amount of time per year. But I guess John Cena is the person who draws, so we get an in-ring promo for him from him. Out comes Vicky Guerrero, and brings out Ryback, and then Cena allows Ryback and Cena go back and forth, and Cena allows Ryback to choose the stipulation for Extreme Rules. And Ryback chooses Last Man Standing. To be honest with you, I think that this is just a way to make Ryback seem like a worthy contender. However, this will still continue his streak of pay-per-views without a win. And we did talk about a flavor of the week before as far as pay-per-views, insanely ridiculous losing streak or winless streak at pay-per-views. And still, he is yet to win a pay-per-view in 2013, of course. But the last pay-per-view that he won was Money in the Bank 2012 against Kirk Hawkins and Tyler Rex. So it's been 10 months since this guy has won a pay-per-view, but for some reason the WWE still found it worthy to make him a number one contender. It's absolutely insane. I like Ryback, but at the same time, he doesn't just have the star power to just be inserted into any type of major storyline. They need to build Ryback properly. Similar, I've said this many times before, dating back to October, I was definitely reluctant when they thrusted him in the main event scene after when Cena was hurt, going into Hell in a Cell against CM Punk, but I really believe they should have put the title on Ryback there, because the whole Brad Maddox type of screw job, that was the beginning of the end of Ryback as far as a worthy main eventer. They had a chance to redeem themselves at the Royal Rumble and have him win it, but they give it to John Cena, who does not need to win any Royal Rumble ever in life, when he can cut a promo the next night on Raw and be in the world title scene. So, wasn't a big fan of it, like I said before, but for some reason, Ryback's in the world, in the WWE title scene. Don't think that the Last Man Standing match will help him at all. Don't see John Cena basically having the title for about a month and a half to lose it to Ryback. But hopefully this does something for Ryback, because if and probably when he loses, then what? That's the biggest question. What for Ryback after this? Does he continue to build himself as a heel? And if that's the case, it's kind of backwards, because he should already build himself as a heel in order to be fed to Cena. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes. Randy Orton defeats Damian Sandow. Not too bad of a match. Orton is starting to become revived a little bit. The fans are really getting behind him. He really plays to the crowd a lot more than he used to when he was kind of stoic. And so it may have been a decision by him. It may have been a decision by the creative staff to just encourage or suggest to Orton that he just kind of plays to the crowd a lot more. So we didn't really see that for a while. But now he does. And now it's a good thing that he does, because, you know, it's been a while, so maybe this is about the decent time to start putting him back into the world title scene, because he's just kind of been under the radar for far too long. I was just talking to Derek about Randy Orton versus John Cena, and how they were legitimately compared to one another as far as being a star is concerned. But now, I mean, John Cena runs circles around Randy Orton as far as top guy and, you know, a recognizable superstar in the WWE. So we'll see where that goes. We'll see if Orton becomes included in the title scene soon. Big Show comes out, KO punches Orton as he was hitting the back, so more to that feud. another just throwaway feud for both of them. That really didn't mean, really don't mean much. R-Truth defeats Fandango by count out. Fandango walks out, and Chris Jericho and Tongues of Funk were the judges during the match. An interesting win by R-Truth. I keep saying this. I like how they're booking R-Truth. He's not like that Zack Ryder type of mid-carder that you know he's going to lose. As a mid-carder, R-Truth actually has a pretty good record. So hopefully they continue to keep him in that so he can be, you know, he can actually develop a good feud on the mid-card scene anytime. He did that with Cesaro, so maybe they can have him and Wade Barrett have a small feud for the mid-card title. Daniel Bryan backstage interview challenges Ryback to a rematch. Ryback appears and rejects, saying that he's, Daniel Bryan's half the man that Ryback is, and then Kane is behind him and turns him around and asks him if he's half the man. And Ryback, basically, that just sets up a main event match between Ryback and Kane. This was pretty sad to me because I know that, once again, it's what's really sad is that Kane, as long as he's been with the company, he came in October of 97. So we're approaching 16 years of Kane being a part of this company. And as for someone his look, for someone his size, for someone his athleticism, he's basically the resident underdog. And there's no way in the world that Kane should be an underdog in any stretch of the imagination. But if he fights someone like CM Punk, if he fights someone like Dolph Ziggler, if he fights someone like even Daniel Bryan to a certain extent, Kane's the underdog. And that was ridiculous. We need to go back to the days of, I believe it was Fully Loaded 2000, I'm not mistaken, or Armageddon 2000 when they had, when Kane and Chris Jericho had a last man standing match. I think it was Armageddon of 2000. And so at that point in time, Kane was dominant. Jericho was the underdog babyface. And Jericho won that match. But Kane was such a dominant name. And it's so funny that Ryback even made mention of yesterday of saying, you know, you're not the Kane that you used to be. And that's so true. As crazy as that sounds, on camera for a wrestler to say that about another wrestler, it's so true. I mean, he's some type of diluted Kane that just doesn't have a good win-loss record. So, Andre the Giant and Big John Studd is the correct answer for the participants of the $25,000 Body Slam Challenge. Next question is, the team known as Tex Slashinger and Shanghai Pierce became what popular WWE tag team? So in the WCW, they were known as Tex Slashinger and Shanghai Pierce. They became popular after that in the WWE as what tag team name? Next we have Alberto Del Rio going against Dolph Ziggler. Another confusing type of match. Big E interferes during the Alberto Del Rio having a cross arm breaker on Dolph Ziggler. Jack Swagger, who's at ringside with Zeb Coulter at the announcer's booth, takes out everyone with the ladder. although it was a bit confusing, I will say that this build is probably the best build that I have right now as far as Extreme Rules, because I guess the most predictable name would be Dolph Ziggler, but because of the wins and losses that we've been experiencing, although I still think that Ziggler shouldn't have lost clean, I think it should have been like a count out. him walk out or disqualification or something like that. However, I do think that the predictability makes a lot of sense as far as Dolph Ziggler not being guaranteed to win the match. So I think that this is a much better build than the WWE Championship, because we know that we know that John Cena is not going to lose that title. I mean, I'm pulling for Ryback, but it's just a lost cause because I'm not going to make the effort to try to pull for Ryback, knowing that we're not going to see him win. So a little convoluted as far as the build is concerned, but it's actually working in the favor of the triple threat match. Then we get a secret admirer segment again. I mean, there's articles roaming around as far as who's the secret admirer. I mean, what does this do? Does this build more of a attention to the divas? Does this expand or does this formulate some type of legitimate mid-card title feud? Does Caitlyn turn heel? Those questions are interesting, but who really cares, though? I mean, that's what it really boils down to. You know, okay, Caitlyn has a secret admirer. Okay, you know, I know I can speak for myself in saying that, you know, it's not a big deal that Caitlyn has a secret admirer and they're trying to make a legitimate storyline around it. Because to be honest with you, the payoff for storylines, to be honest, the payoff for the storylines for a number of years have been lackluster. And I think I explained that a little bit as far as the biggest storyline reveals that I had as a flavor of the week topic a while ago. And we're actually going to kind of revive some flavor of the week topic. All right, we are back here. Thank you so much. Very much apologize for the technical difficulties we experience. As everyone who watches the show on a regular know that that happens very infrequently. So, but we do want to thank you for holding on and continuing to be with us during the show. So thank you so much for that. Thank you for your support and in the midst of just unplanned circumstances like this. But we're still going to have some fun, though. Still do see some correct answers in the chat room of the Godwins being the team known as Tex Slasinger and Shanghai Pierce became the popular WWE team of the Godwins. So great job. Next question is, what ECW faction was Chris Candido a member of? What ECW faction was Chris Candido a member of? All right. We were on the topic of John Cena. Well, I'm sorry, the Secret Admirer segment. It doesn't seem like it really has a big payoff on it. But hopefully it does revive the Divas division. At least it is giving some type of exposure. But at the same time, I'll just be waiting for the payoff before I heavily critique it based on the bad payoffs of the past. I will just watch and see where this goes. Next, we have the Shield defeating Kofi Kingston and the Usos. It was a good match. However, the gripe that I have with that is that the Shield is absolutely the Shield is absolutely the team. They're the team. They're the most dominant team in the WWE right now as far as stable is concerned, which is, once again, our point of the week topic is the pro wrestling's greatest stables. Are the Shield included in that? We shall see. The thing is, Kofi Kingston and the Usos are a great athletic team, but they had no chance, they had absolutely no chance of winning this match. This match was totally geared to have totally geared for good action. But the problem is it just really wasn't, it was just kind of useless. Because the Shield, and I said this before, maybe the Shield should look a bit weaker because the predictability that the Shield has is pretty evident. And going into, especially when we get on SmackDown, what they did on SmackDown, and then, you know, what they did at the end of the show. And it's just that the Shield is unstoppable, so the predictability of them losing is insanely non-existent, basically. So we shall see them continuing to, you know, add to that push. So we need, I think that they did a good job with the angle between Big Show, Randy Orton, and Sheamus. There will be a few times where they will retreat back into the crowd when they will come out. And so that was good. That made them a bit weak. That made them have a shot of losing. But I think right now they just need to kind of work a little bit more on the writing as far as making the Shield look like they're going to lose. Otherwise, we'll just get good matches, but be fully aware that who's going to win with no type of thrill, no type of predictability factor. Antonio Cesaro defeats Zack Ryder and cuts a post-match promo. It was absolutely happy with this. I'm so glad that Antonio Cesaro is getting some type of revival, because I really want to say ha-ha, and I'm not vindictive like this, but I really want to say ha-ha to the world of avid wrestling critics. Write a segment on Bleacher Report called Over Under, and the article that I wrote about Cesaro was the Over Under was whether he'll have the World Heavyweight Championship within 9 months, so by around next year's Rumble, and I said he would, and I really hope that they're trying to kind of give him a push to have him win that Money in the Bank. I'm really pulling for Cesaro to win the Money in the Bank. I am a Antonio Cesaro fan. He deserves to have a push. And from what I've read from different reports, he wasn't even in the proverbial doghouse. They just decided that Antonio Cesaro was someone they didn't want to push anymore. But I'm glad that he is getting some type of push again. Paul Heyman via satellite shows exclusive footage of him and Brock Lesnar invading WWE offices. And then Triple H appears live in the arena and walks in the ring and cuts a promo. It was a decent segment. It was a good way to use Brock Lesnar. We're tired of the face-to-face confrontation between Brock Lesnar and Triple H. Again, I'm not a big fan of the extension of WrestleMania in this feud. It'll probably be a good match, but at the same time, going from SummerSlam to WrestleMania and having the rubber match between two names like that be the month after at Extreme Rules, I just don't think that's a good idea. But I do understand that The Rock, you know, is injured and things were supposed to be different, but I don't think that's a good decision to do that. But this is what we have, and this is what we'll go with. Old school Cage is coming back in Extreme Rules, so I like that. I'll tell you what, though, I did write my article about the recap show last week. And by the way, I want to thank everyone who continues to support Pancakes and Power Slams, who continues to support the show. The last week's recap episode got around the 45,000 read mark on Bleacher Report, so that was absolutely phenomenal. So thank you so much for your support and reading and getting to know more about Pancakes and Power Slams, those who are familiar with the show and those who have listened to it for the first time. We have a lot of fun here. Speaking of a lot of fun, I still do not see any type of I think 45K on Bleacher Report, give it up. Thank you, chat room, very much for your support. Again, log on to the chat room. We have a lot of fun. That's where you will answer your questions of trivia at. And also, the number to call live is 347-884-8452. And actually, we do have a caller. So let us know your name, where you're from, and your thoughts. Caller, you are on the air.
Hello, man. Thank you for letting me get on the show. My name is Patrick Hoffman, South Carolina, man.
Hey, Patrick, man. You are the man. Again, you get some frequent caller points, man. We really appreciate your support. What's on your mind?
Hey, basically I want to, you know, kind of like chime in the conversation about the Shield. You know, it's been recent reports where both groups, I don't know if you're a TNA watcher, but both groups are basically kind of like putting themselves in the conversation of being somewhat group somewhere subpar to the NWO. And, I don't think that both these groups are actually in the conversation, but they're more focused mainly on the Shield. You know, they're a good dominant group. good three-man tag team as a cohesive unit. They do destroy people and stuff like that. But Mike's skills, are really, terrible. The catchphrase is actually terrible. And, this six-man tag team that happened on Raw was actually pretty bad. Another reason why I guess it probably would be pretty bad is on the fact that, you got the Usos that could be promoted a little bit more better than what they are being promoted as. This is the first time in a long time since they've been on Raw. Their only appearances in the last about 2 or 3 months was on Main Event and on SmackDown. So that kind of throws the match off when you have them go against the Usos, which are not too long joining the roster. Well, I wouldn't say that, I'm sorry. But they are not being promoted right, so it kind of makes a good, crappy match. You look at Kofi Kingston, which, you give him back the belt. Of course, he took 1 week off because, he had his little son. Congratulated him on being a father. But at the same time, though, they want to put him in the conversation of being a U.S. champ, but they're kind of like not really doing nothing with that storyline. And we've seen this time over and over and over again, which, that it's not going to be a good storyline with him having a belt once again. So I guess it makes it a crappy match. I kind of have to disagree with the whole Randy Orton Big Show Sheamus feud they had. I don't know. I kind of like really hated that storyline a little bit.
All right, Patrick. Thank you so much, sir. We really appreciate you. You made some good points, man. I definitely have to agree on the Usos part. I've shouted from the rooftop that the Usos is probably the biggest underutilized talent that the WWE has. It's so funny how much of a good team the Usos are, but still they have yet to win a tag team title. I mean, if you really want to establish tag team wrestling again, you need some good tag teams in the fold. Now you're going to essentially right now the tag team titles are just props to build around the Shield getting over, and that's ridiculous. They don't need props. They don't need weekly just destroy segments. They don't need all that. Ryback was good enough for them to make them realize that they're over. Ryback was their initial sacrificial lamb, and he was for a number of times. But like I said before, they've beaten 8 world champions, so that's enough in and of itself. So, and you're also right about the Kofi Kingston part. We're 2 weeks out before Extreme Rules, and there's absolutely no build for Kofi Kingston. We kind of saw it last week. Not last week. And you're right. Congratulations, Kofi Kingston. We kind of saw it. It was last week in Columbus, Ohio. We did see it last week with Big E Langston, giving him the big ending. We thought that was going to formulate into a mid-card title feud, a U.S. title feud. But we don't get that. So dropped the ball on that for sure. And then lastly, yes, I do watch TNA, of course. I don't know if that was a misstatement from you, but this is Pancakes and Power Slams, baby. We cover it all. Anything you see on TV, we cover it all. WWE, Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, and ROH. So, and as far as just a little history lesson, I've been watching TNA since its inception in 2002. And as a matter of fact, just a random trivia question that I know that I'm throwing out there. Who was the first ever TNA World Heavyweight Champion? The first ever TNA World Heavyweight Champion. So, yeah, like I said, man, we have a lot of fun here on Pancakes and Power Slams. Thank you, everyone, for your support. Call in live, 347-884-8452. Again, 347-884-8452. That is the number to call live. We're about to get our Raw correspondent, Derek, here on the line. Before that, there's a few other elements that I want to talk about. Going back to the Paul Heyman part, I like that. I like that segment simply because, like I said, we don't want to see Brock Lesnar and Triple H confrontations every week. I mean, that would just get pointless and useless. But one thing that I did like, and which I said in an article, I said in a recap article, they should revitalize the World Heavyweight Championship and the prestige that come by it by having the part-timers and more established stars hold or at least go for the title. And when Lesnar was in Triple H's office and he was holding the title, I mean, Paul Heyman made that a big deal. I mean, he was saying Brock Lesnar, you know, World Heavyweight Champion. And I think that was a fantastic move. Even the subtlety of that just spoke volumes to me. The very fact that it just kind of went on to what I have been saying as far as what to do to revitalize the World Heavyweight Championship. It's an amazingly prestigious title. The big gold belt traces a number of years, a number of Hall of Famers, a number of legends, and someone like Brock Lesnar holding the World Heavyweight title would be fantastic. And that would headline a pay-per-view, get the World Heavyweight Championship back in its appropriate standing within wrestling, period. And if they want to, you know, have someone chase the title against Brock Lesnar, even if they lose, that could be a main event match. And that would put the World Heavyweight Championship back in the main event, and it won't put so much dependency on some stale, predictable WWE Championship match that's involving John Cena. So I liked the segment. It was a good segment, and I really hope that they really pay attention to that as far as having the big names not only vie for the WWE Championship, but really bring back the legacy and the prestige of the World Heavyweight Championship. When I have more time, I'm going to really sit down and think about what caused the World Heavyweight Championship to lose its luster. Like, who had it that just really come? Because I'm thinking of Edge and Jericho was a few WrestleManias ago. That was great. That was like the third or fourth to last match. So that was great. Edge and Del Rio, I think, was the next year. I think that kind of lost its luster there. You had the next year. The Sheamus and Daniel Bryan match that really bombed it. The 18 second match. Daniel Bryan was a good champion, but the 18 second finish really just kind of messed that up as far as the World Heavyweight Championship. So it needs to be revitalized, period, point blank. And the Brock Lesnar subtleties that we saw really gave it some hope again. Caitlin and the Funkadactyls defeat AJ Lee and the Bella Twins. There you go. Mark Henry in-ring promo calls, and I'll tell you what, Mark Henry is the man. I mean, just his no-nonsense character, he just reminds me of, like, the really mean uncle. He's just a really mean big uncle, and like old school uncle. And I really think that the very fact that, I mean, you know, we know that the calls are, I mean, the promos are scripted for the most part. It's mostly outlined, and then they just kind of speak on that. But the when he, the part that he did, what he was saying was Sheamus, and they were saying, what? With Sheamus, what? With Sheamus, what? You all a bunch of puppets. And that part, when he did that, that was just absolutely very, very great part of the show. And you really, you can really tell that that was just kind of on the off the cuff, which was really, really good. It was good, it was a great thing to see. So. And then he gets one, you know, Sheamus comes out and the two square off, and Wade Baird comes out and you know, prepare for their match. Sheamus defeats Wade Baird, but Mark Henry gets his, I mean, he had his moment. He World's Strongest slams him outside. He rams him into, you know, the barricade. He, you know, whips him. Give him a little Southern love with the whipping segment, and I was sharing with a colleague of mine just the off the mic things that Mark Henry says. You know, this ain't no joke. I'll see y'all laughing now. Like, just the off the mic things that he says. This ain't no joke. You know, where you at now? And that's what I do. You know, that's my favorite. Like I said, I tweeted about this. I still don't understand why WWE has not capitalized on that and patented. I think I might patent it and get some money. Or maybe I shouldn't say that live on air in front of hundreds of thousands of people. But maybe I should have saved that for later. But trust me, Mr. Ben has an insanely significantly amount of more money than I do. So me trying to trademark that would take some months, but he, you know, in the morning he'll get all of his, he'll get the correct department and get that trademark within a couple of hours, if that. So point is, they should capitalize on that statement and get some cool merchandise. I mean, you can get some really good merchandise by his That's What I Do little mantra that he has now. But yeah, like I said, his little off the mic stings are just absolutely hilarious, and I think it's really good. Ryback defeats Kane. Like I said, I really think that Kane is just really an underdog. It's really sad that he just gets fed to the people like that. We saw that on SmackDown as well. So it's really unfortunate, and I really think that Kane should really have one good run left as a world heavyweight champion, and and get a proper send off. I mean, I have no idea why they're just feeding him to just anybody. He is a great name, a big name, but at least revive the old Kane back. So then the Shield appears, Ryback leaves the ring, Daniel Bryan comes in before Ryback leaves the ring, and John Cena comes after. Ryback comes back to the ring with the chair, he swings it at the Shield, and then he hits Cena with the chair while he had the Shield member of the AA, and then he brags over him about it. Just a simple one-up leading to Extreme Rules. That really didn't do much to me, just because I said, I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I'm usually good at my predictions as far as wrestling match is concerned. I think, mostly speaking, I think WrestleMania only got one match wrong, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not quite sure. I mentioned it on a previous show, but I think it was only one match row. and I believe it was the pre-show, because I think I had Wade Barrett defeating Miz, and Miz defeated Wade Barrett at the pre-show. And, of course, I got the eight-man Tons of Funk and Funkadactyls against Team Road Scholars and Bella's wrong, because it didn't happen. So, all right, we're going to bring in our Raw correspondent, Derek, on the line. He will be getting on the line really quick in the midst of the week. Before we do that, we are going to quickly, again, let you know, 347-884-8452. Bit stuffy today, a bit under the weather for the past week, but I will not refuse to be on the show. I will not refuse to do the best that I can, you know, to be sure to bring your pancakes and power slams every week, because I know the support base is incredibly strong. So thank you so much for continuing to be there. And when we do that, we are going to bring in our Raw correspondent, Derek. We'll be on the line here in one moment. Just one moment. All righty, and we have Derek on the line, letting us know his thoughts.
Yeah, you want to know my thoughts? My thoughts are awesome. Hey, listen, John Cena had a funny promo last night. Raw started off with John Cena, and he was mocking Ryback. Reminded me of when The Rock used to mock everybody. However, you know, it was a funny Cena moment, you know, and he comes out last man standing. That works. You know, we'll see Ryback, see what he's made of. I'm still not convinced Ryback's like a last-ditch effort to anything useful. John Cena owes me $1.63 from 2008 was kind of funny. That was a good moment in Raw. You expect that funny, you know, sideshow from Raw, and that's what you got. So we'll look forward and see what happens with that. You know, you mentioned Randy Orton, how he was great back in the day, going head-to-head to Cena, and now he's just kind of been complacent. He's run-of-the-mill Randy Orton. He still is. And the Sandow match was decent. But Orton's been lost in the shuffle. He has been for a long time. It's going to take something really dramatic to bring him back to believable expectations that this guy is something that can carry the company or help carry the company. He's a mid-carder. And as far as I see, he's going to stay that way for a long time. Yeah, the Y2J and Fandango, I love the pairing of the two. I really enjoy that. I like the Fandango. His promos, I like his character with Y2J being involved in it. I've said this every Pancakes and Power Slams I've been talking on. Y2J makes anyone look good. Fandango, he makes Fandango look like a saint. They both of them together, they need to stay together. Fandango needs Y2J. Until Fandango can run on his own, Y2J is a guy that can make him shine. Ziggler versus Del Rio, that was a good match. I'm not going to go much further with that. And I liked how you mentioned how Triple H, Brock Lesnar is better when he's not face-to-face being confrontational. I totally agree with that. Seeing Brock invading the WWE offices with Heyman, it kind of reminded me back when, you know, there was a time when Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar would hang out backstage and drink milk and do all kinds of silly stuff, and it was good for Brock. You saw Brock as a different, he's not just this big, stupid oaf, you know. I mean, he's aggressive, but there's a side to him that they need to exploit a little more. And there's that, and I can't remember the guy's name. He had one leg, and Brock Lesnar pushed him down the stairs in the wheelchair. The name slips my mind, but again, backstage, Brock Lesnar he's a totally different person than what he is when he comes to, you know, want to fight and be confrontational with people. Because he gets old. He gets boring. He's like, oh, I'm this big, tough guy. Well, you know what? Zach Gowen, that was a one-legged guy. I wonder where he is today, but everybody in the wrestling world remembers Zach Gallen. Let's have a moment of silence. Okay, thank you. And so, you know, Brock Lesnar, there's more to him, but again, the repeating Triple H, let's wrestle Triple H again, Triple H again, Triple H again. Okay, that's what you expect from WWE sometimes. And the whole Ryback and Kane, I agree with Chris. Ryback is nobody to beat Kane. Kane has been around since, again, fall of 1997. He's been dominant. He's been WWE champion. He took on the likes of Stone Cold. He's taken on the likes of, you know, Mick Foley, Undertaker. And now he's almost not even an underdog. He's just another stepping stone, and an easy stepping stone in that fact. And that is, it's not right. Kane, he's a good character. He's a good person. He's not a Brooklyn brawler. He's not someone that everyone comes in and defeats, but that's what it's starting to look like. They've been building Kane with the team Hell No, and he's becoming a little more prominent as far as, you know, this is Kane, put him out on the forefront. But his wrestling abilities, wrestling past knowledge, is better than what they're having him deliver. We'll keep it at that. Ryback is a heel. You know, he's got nothing else to go on. So we'll see where that goes. What's going to happen next? He's going to be a tag team and do whatever he wants to do. Who knows? He was a good character 8 months ago. Now it's just kind of getting old and boring. What's going to happen next with Ryback? Best of luck. The Shield, I'm still a big fan of The Shield. I like the promos. I like when they come out to the audience. It's something. It's not different. It's been done in the past with The Edge and Brood and everyone, but I'm still getting into it. But again, it's starting to come kind of, you know, what are they going to do next? What's their big thing that's going to happen? So I'll keep watching The Shield. Didn't they have some kind of connection with Paul Heyman not too long ago? Whatever happened to that? So Monday Night Raw was a good Raw. What do you think? Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. A little glitch there. Thank you so much there, Derek, for your great, great, great correspondence. Very hit the nail on the head in many ways. We definitely want to give some time. It's Flavor of the Week, so we are going to go forward with the SmackDown recap here. We first start off with Ryback cutting the in-ring promo. Out comes his opponent, Daniel Bryan. Ryback defeats Daniel Bryan. Oh, that was a really good match, by the way. I think that it was just a matter of accentuating Ryback's positives because of the heel. He's doing a good job with just really showing the power in his character, but we saw some flaws when he was a babyface. I still prefer him being honed in as a babyface. They had something really good there, but they dropped the ball. But Daniel Bryan really gave him an opportunity to really accentuate his positives as far as the power is concerned. The first ever TNA champion is yet to be answered through Twitter at Crave Wrestling or on the chat room. Again, the first ever TNA World Heavyweight Champion has yet to be, well, at least answered correctly. I do see some attempts, but not answered correctly. So that's on the fly question. And I'll have another one here soon. Ricardo Rodriguez backstage promo. Fandango defeats Zack Ryder. But the crazy thing is I thought that he was going to stop the leg drop. That's what I just don't understand. I really thought that he was going to stop the leg drop to prevent him from tearing up his hip. And like I said, I mean, I compare Fandango to the modern day Val Venus, and I think that his career will definitely be a reflection of Val Venus's. Val Venus had a mid-card title and tag team titles, and had some decent feuds. So I definitely think that we will see that as far as Fandango's career is concerned. If he gets that far, it might just be a flash in the pan. The Fandangoing has diminished a bit. The random chants or random singing is no longer existent, so it's kind of diminishing a little bit. I do think that WWE made a good choice by releasing merchandise of Fandango. I think that they did it at the right time, so from a PR or promotional marketing standpoint, I think that was good. So kudos on that. Caitlin, Natalya, and the Great Khali backstage segment. Khali gives advice to Caitlin after she read the text from her admirer, another admirer segment. Like I said, we'll see what that happens with that. Zeb Coulter backstage interview. Ricardo Rodriguez versus Zeb Coulter. This is the whole convoluted thing I was talking about, even more than Monday. So first you had Ricardo Rodriguez against Zeb Coulter. Then Swagger interferes, and Del Rio takes him out. Teddy Long comes out and changes it to a tag match. And then Dolph Ziggler and Big E interferes, and Teddy Long changes it to a triple threat match. And then Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez wins. Should have just done that in the beginning. Del Rio makes Ziggler tap. It's just a clean loss, again, from Dolph Ziggler. Not good for the new World Heavyweight Champion. Shield backstage video promo shows a beaten Daniel Bryan. Another Randy Orton versus Damian Sandow match. I think the match on Raw was better. Big Show cuts promo post-match, distracts Orton enough to allow Sandow to perform the Terminus finisher. Kane backstage promo. Then we get Sheamus and Mark Henry arm wrestling contest. Mark Henry wins, and he's persuaded by Sheamus to do another one with his left arm. Then Henry gets punched while they were locking up and bro kicked. And then Dean Ambrose defeats Kane, attacked by Shield post-match. I mean, just to sum up what Derek and I were saying, I mean, Kane is just a guinea pig now. I mean, he's just a lamb to the slaughter. And he should be the slaughterhouse leader. But he's the lamb, and that's ridiculous coming from someone like Kane. Just totally disagree with that. So maybe we'll see some type of revival with Kane. I tell you what, I was so shocked when Kane beat Randy Orton at WrestleMania last year. That was incredible. I was so surprised about that, and was really happy that they made that decision. All right, let's go to Impact Wrestling. Hulk Hogan calls out Sting, apologizes, and they shake hands. Matt Morgan appears and talks to Hogan about being number one contender. Hogan books Sting versus Morgan for a main event. Winner becomes number one contender at Slammiversary. Chris Sabin defeats Zema Ion and Sanjay Dutt. Good to see Sabin back. I wrote in my article, my Impact Wrestling review, and in my Pancakes and Power Slams review, that having the decision of Chris Sabin being forced, really, to be a member of the triple threat concept that they have on the new X Division, I don't think that that's right whatsoever. I don't think that that's a good idea. We have a comment in the chat room says, so who else thinks that the show last week in Columbus sucked? The Raw, they need to do more Orton Sandow matches. I do think, and great comment following this, it says Matt Morgan needs to build a bigger fan base before people can get behind him. Absolutely right. The Raw in Columbus was not the best, but I was there, so I guess that has a soft spot in my heart. You're absolutely right about the Matt Morgan piece. Matt Morgan is, and I wrote in my Impact Wrestling review that although Sting's my favorite wrestler, but I do have to admit that Sting is, it's about that time, sadly to say. But still, he's still a bigger draw than Matt Morgan. Matt Morgan is not over enough to, especially since they have the four pay-per-views now of Genesis, Slammiversary, Bound for Glory, and the other one is Genesis. I'm sorry. So you have Genesis, Lockdown, Bound for Glory. Genesis, Lockdown, Slammiversary, and Bound for Glory. There you go. There's the four pay-per-views. Since you only have four pay-per-views, which I think that they may change that because that was a bad idea. It was a good gamble, but the very fact that they are probably going to break even is a disaster, because if you're going to basically bring it down to four pay-per-views, you really should depend on the numbers of those four pay-per-views being, astronomically higher than, the monthly pay-per-views, and they haven't been whatsoever. So they'll probably go back to the monthly pay-per-view format, especially with their traveling schedule now, that it won't be in the impact zone every week. Going back to the monthly pay-per-views would really help out with the storyline building and things of that nature, because I'm a traditionalist. I'm all about proper storyline building. I'm all about the nuances within matches. However, I do think that the pulse of wrestling right now needs a correct balance and proper storyline build that keeps us going. I'm surprised that the Aces and Eights, it'll be a year next month that they've been around. But at the same time, it's about time for them to make their exit, too. And it looks like we're going to see that with what we saw on Impact Wrestling. Robbie E. and Jesse Goddard's talk backstage. Robbie E. Says, sleazy and easy doesn't even rhyme, bro. Last time I checked, sleazy is just easy with an S and an L. Last time I checked, although you spelled sleazy with a Z, but it still has the same pronunciation. I mean, sleazy and easy. If that doesn't rhyme, Robbie E should not be a wrestler on TNA. I mean, that literally pretty much says it all there. That was just really odd. Aces and Eights talk backstage. D'Lo steps up to face Kurt Angle. Rob Terry defeats Joey Ryan. Jesse Goddard to Robbie E. He needs to get away from the sleazy, spectacular bros, because they're just I compare them to the 3MB of TNA, because just three. Just an opportunity just for three people to be on TV that's kind of like the same, thrown in a little bitty faction, and just having an opportunity to have some TV time. I'm okay with it just because it's really a spot filler, but Rob Terry needs to get away from it if he wants to be a legitimate babyface. Bobby Roode and Austin Aries in-ring promo, interrupted by Bad Influence and Chavo Hernandez. Chavo Hernandez introduced special ref for next week's match versus James Storm. No big deal here. I mean, the bigger problem is they need more tag team wrestlers. You've had three tag teams that's revolved around the scene for months now, and they really need, they desperately need more tag team wrestlers, especially since the tag team division in the WWE is not strong whatsoever. and two of their their bread and butter was the X Division and Tag Team Division within TNA over the past throughout the years. If you have one thing better than the WWE, you need to capitalize on that as much as you can. And the very fact that their tag team division has throughout the years been known to be better than the WWE's, they can't slack on that. And they have. I think that their matches has been really good, but the division as a whole is just really thin, and they need to really get some more tag teams in the fold. Kurt Angle defeats D'Lo in an I Quit match. Aces and Eights members Anderson and Doc look on with just disappointment. It seems like shades of getting away from either D'Lo getting out of Aces and Eights, which I'm not okay with because I think he's a good acquisition, or just Aces and Eights just quietly disbanding, which I don't think that's the case, or just the start of the end of the Aces and Eights, which I do think that that's the case. I do think we'll see the end of Aces and Eights come Bound for Glory in October. But Kurt Angle calls out AJ Styles, offers him the spot on a six-man match next week, and he gives an ultimatum. Matt Morgan backstage interview. Taryn Terrell and Mickie James defeats Taryn and Gail Kim. Gail Kim snaps on Taryn Terrell post-match, gives her the Bret Hart-like figure four in the post. That was really nice. That was a really good move to see again. I remember when Bret Hart would just really put it on some people. So that was just really, really, really good to see that again. Continue to get on the chat room. Looks like there's a good conversation going on now. Next question. Again, speaking of TNA, I still do not get the correct answer of the first ever TNA champion. I'm going to give that a little bit more time and then get back on and then ask another question because nobody looks like I've stumped people. And they're in the chat room is actually talking about TNA. So come on, wrestling scholars, where are you? All right, so next we get the Ace and Ace talk backstage. Bully Ray says he will confront D'Lo next week. Choose himself, Devon, and Anderson for a six-man match. This would be a decent match for the live show. And then finally, the main event, Steen defeats Matt Morgan, becomes number one contender at Slammiversary. Aces and Eights bragged Sting post-match. That match was just really sad, to be honest with you. And that's coming from someone whose favorite wrestler, Sting. That was just such a sad match. Just Morgan's size didn't really match Sting's moveset that much, and the Scorpion Deathlock just looked like he was taking some time to just unwind because he was really winded, and it was just a really sad match, to be honest. So hopefully we see a lot better. The match between Sting and AJ Styles was actually good, but Morgan and Sting was just not good whatsoever. And I really hope that we see a lot better with Sting and Bully Ray. All right, I'm going to check the chat room to see the correct answer. If not, I'll go for it. Nope, no answer. The first TNA champion was Ken Shamrock. The first TNA champion was Ken Shamrock. All right. The next question is, what ECW faction was Chris Candido a member of? what ECW faction was Chris Candido a member of? All right, we're going to go to ROH real quick. ROH was a good show, really good show. First start off with Machine Gun Carl Anderson defeating Michael Logan. Fantastic match. I'm a big fan of Carl Anderson. I followed him in Japan, and he used to team up with Giant Bernard. We know Giant Bernard is Tensai now, or Sweet Tea, but they had a really good tag team in Japan, and so I think now he has another team called Sword and Guns. So they're doing pretty good. They're doing a really good job throughout the coast, and I really think that showing him on the States, showing him on TV in the States, is a really good idea, especially seeing how just his moves, just everything about Carl Anderson is money, and the exchanges that Michael Logan had was absolutely phenomenal. So major kudos to that match, and that was an awesome match to start off ROH. Mitch Schiff defeats Davian by disqualification. Interference by Veda Scott. David Richards defeats Kyle O'Reilly. That was an absolutely awesome match as well. A sick brainbuster bump off the ring. If you get a chance, check that out. I mean, that was just absolutely sick as far as the bump. It wasn't me. Kyle O'Reilly was reversing a he was trying to give David Richards a suplex outside of the ring, and it was he was going to do a brainbuster on the apron, and he missed the apron. So he did a brainbuster straight from the ring to the floor. And so that was very, very interesting there. So great ROH, really good action overall. All right, let's spend the next 10 minutes or so with the flavor of the week. Bring Derek back on the line, and he's going to start with number 10.
Number 10, we're going with the Heenan family. I don't know if you remember the Heenan family back in the 80s. And actually, 1969 is when it started. He's had everybody from Big Ernie, Big Cat Ernie Ladd, Ron Bass, Austin Idol. Most of the Heenan family from the WWF. Yeah. Ken Patera. Big John Studd, then after that, from the $25,000 slam match, the first question tonight, he later on to manage Andre the Giant. He's had everyone from Mr. Wonderful Pond or Harley Race, Ravishing Rick Rude, Haku, one of my personal favorites, Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. And you just cannot deny the genius of Bobby the Brain Heenan, the best, in my opinion, best manager there ever was in wrestling history. He's covered all the major promotions, and he's always had success. So, again, in a faction, a family, to be more exact, Bobby the Brain Heenan had the best talent for knowing who to build on. He built people. All he had to do was talk, and the person was gold. So, you can't ask much more from a manager.
All right, we have number 9, which is the Dangerous Alliance, and it comprised of a group led by Paulie Dangerously. And basically, Paulie Dangerously just really changed the scene as a manager within the NWA. So yeah, it was just a really, really good alliance there. It really started, I believe it was like Ricky Steamboat, and he was feuding with Rick Rude around the time, and I believe that Paul Heyman was originally managing the Midnight Express. And, Dangerous Alliance. We will be right back.
The radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lanes. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Alrighty, we are back. Another event that we had, and I apologize if that we not. But hey, this is what happens when we have so much fun. Thank you for listening to the show. And we will just continue to have a great time.
All right.
Thank you so much for the just withstanding all of everything that was involved and all that. We are back here. We are live. We are here live in the studio, and all the technicians is going to be fired. that is doing the show today. But thank you for listening. Again, the next question is, what ECW faction was Chris Candido a member of? Again, what ECW faction was Chris Candido a member of? I think I saw a union in the chat room, which was quite odd. ECW faction, the union was never the ECW unless they made some type of BWO invasion. But the Danger Alliance is number 9. Rick Rude, Steve Austin, Bobby Eaton, Arn Anderson, Larry Zbyszko.
on Anderson and Larry Zbyszko were called the Enforcers at the time. They were they became tag team champions. Rick Rude was managed by Medusa. He was the U.S. champion. Steve Austin was television champion and came with Lady Blossom at the time. And I Dave's Alliance, just the whole thought of the four of them coming together. Oh, I'm sorry. Five, I believe. Again, Anderson, Zbyszko, Austin, Rude, and Eaton. So it was five of them. The five of them coming together was a fantastic idea, and it was just one of those things that really, because I believe Eaton made a heel turn at the time too, because he was a babyface. He was just kind of in. He was just not really a big. Of course, he's a big name, but he wasn't really being utilized frequently at the time. But he was playing a babyface, and he kind of assisted the Dangerous Alliance because they were there. He was assisting the Enforcers because, if I'm not mistaken, they were feuding with Ricky Steamboat and Barry Windham. Ricky Steamboat and Dustin Rhodes at the time. And Eaton kind of. I think Eaton kind of assisted Rick Rude. That's what it was. Eaton assisted Rick Rude in his match with Sting, if I'm not mistaken, and kind of made the heel turn there. But the Dangerous Alliance was a good. They were a really good faction. And Paulie Dangerously, or Paul Heyman, as we know him by now, did a fantastic job with that faction. And we put them as number nine. Number eight,
the Hart Foundation. Down to the down. No, but seriously, the Hart Foundation of the mid-late 90s. Bret Hart got Owen together. He got, strangely, Brian Pillman. I don't think he was actually related or a Hart, but he fit in well. We'll give him that much. And then you had the British Bulldogs with him, too. I thought that was a really great faction when they got together. They supported Team Canada. Then you had Stone Cold Steve Austin, the other guy. And I remember the Patriot. He was also involved in it. And Dan Welks, he was the Patriot. And he just had – it was like a war. Oh, of course, DX. They hated the Hart Foundation. Everyone did back then. That was a cool thing to do. You had signs of, you know, the Hart Foundation – being on the American flag and vice versa. And again, that just created such a buzz among the wrestling community as far as, you know, it's Team Canada against Team USA. You had the USA at that time, Attitude Era was just starting, so you had DX and you had Stone Cold Steve Austin, the American, you know, flip your bosses off and let's all be rowdy and have a good time against the humble Canadian. So, I mean, Bret Hart played that well. He played a good heel as much as he played an awesome face. So, everyone together, I thought that was an ingenious idea. I had a great time with that run. And that's number eight. So, I'm thinking about what's number seven. What is number seven? What is it?
Number seven is the Ministry of Darkness. Led by The Undertaker, had some really, really big, had some really big contributions to the Attitude Era. Midi and Viscera, through the APA, really made themselves popular. So, got about 3 minutes, so we're going to go to number six.
Fabulous Freebirds, Bad Street USA. We'll give them props being a late 70s, early 80s team that came together, had a faction against, most of the time they'd go up against WCCW with the Von Erichs, which could also be maybe another faction, but they're all family, so not really. They didn't have the Brian Pillman of the group. So we'll enjoy that. Bad Street USA, honorable mention, they're an awesome team, creative geniuses. What should be number five?
Five is the Corporation. Really, really good group started by Vince McMahon that really gave an opportunity for The Rock to shine. If you remember, the corporation really started when The Rock made his turn as far as the popularity of the corporation. Really, the Rock making his turn, I think it was Survivor Series 98 Deadly Games with his match against Mick Foley. Foley was with Vince and Shane at the time, but The Rock won the WWE title, and Triple H, Boss Man, you had such a McMahon dominance at that time, and the corporation with the forever lived to be one of the most influential factions of the 90s. And number four,
Evolution. You had the past, present, and future. Ric Flair, the all-time world champion in everyone's eyes. Then you had Triple H at the time, was the present champion. Had a lot going for him at the time. Under that, you had Randy Orton, who had stars in his eyes. We all know what Randy Orton is now. Along next to Randy Orton, you had Batista. So it looks like Randy Orton and Batista were kind of fighting between the two of who's going to be the future. Evidently none of them. However, it was a really good idea to put these guys together. Evolution, that makes perfect sense. You've got the grandpa, the father, the sons to go and to be. So we'll give a good shout out to Evolution. They made prominence. So what is number three?
Number three is D-Generation X. If you're not down with that, we got two words for you. Too bad. All right. we got 90 seconds. So the number two is who?
N-W-O.
NWO, they started a maelstrom of merchandising, wrestling in the late 80s. You cannot rule out the NWO. They were the pinnacle. They made everything. Everybody had their T-shirts. Everyone quoted them. They started out as the outsiders, went on the NWO, recruited everybody. You cannot forget the NWO. Hulk Hogan, a real American hero, also black and white.
And finally, the number one, we'll wrap it up real quick, is the Four Horsemen. Woo! Ric Flair, Four Horsemen, just bulldozed throughout the mid to late 80s. A few incarnations, of the Horsemen. The first three or so was good, and then after that, Paul Roma in there and everything in the 90s, which is kind of whack. But the original Four Horsemen, fantastic, the best faction in the whole wide world. Thank you so much for listening to us. Had such great fun, even in the midst of our technical glitches. The technical people are fired or right on the spot, just joking. Next week, we'll be here. Thank you so much. Have a great week. God bless. Goodbye.